Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is another Thursday night. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in the studio tonight with the lovely, charming, giggly Bobby Jean Bell and her husband, Jim, over there. And hi, Jim. How are you? Always good to see you. And our guest, our secret guest, who will be announced later on. And this has been a week. I swear to God, if I had to watch CNN one more time, I was going to shoot myself in the head. But it's over with, and everything is done, and we're moving on.
That's moving it. Forward.
Moving forward, and now everybody can legally smoke dope. I like it. Okay. The Writer's Block. The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing, the nice folks at Black Dog, in Simi Valley, California. And if you're a new writer and need someone to kind of guide you through the process, give Black Dog a call. Their number is 805-795-3165, and they'll be happy to give you a lot of hand. And, of course, not for free. They're always a charge. But we'll be happy to help you out. And on Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in Newhall, California. And they have one of the best online stores going. And I'll let Bobby Jean tell you about the Out West Boutique.
Yes. Out West, shop us at scvoutwest.com. We have apparel and boots and hats and books and CDs. And I've been putting up some really cool jewelry. And, just go online. You can also find out everything about our concert series, about the Writer's Block radio show, about Campfire Cafe radio show. That is the place to go for all things having to do with Out West. scvoutwest.com.
All things radio.
And all things radio.
All the time.
And all things music.
There
and
you
all
go.
Things books.
I mean, all things Bobby Jean. Yay. And we are, of course, permanently sponsored by Target Freight Management in Pennsylvania. And Bobby Jean, take it away.
We do mention Target Freight Management every show. And we mention that they have a full truckload service that's the best in the industry. But have we mentioned that TFM Truckload gets your freight there every time, on time? I think Santa even uses them. No muss, no fuss at the rates you need for your transportation bottom line. Call today at 1-844-653-7789.
Hang tough, Kevin. Hello. I'll be right back to you.
And tell them you heard it on the Writer's Block, and they'll have a little something extra just for you. And while I'm at it, if you are an LTL shipper, you are probably looking for the best rates at the lowest hassle possible. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just the ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 1-888-653-1323. Or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. Call today. You won't be sorry you did. And we thank them for supporting the Writer's Block.
We do. In fact, I just talked to Mike the other day, and he loves the show. So there you go. And he's listened to it a couple of times. And he's got new business out of it. So it's all good. We have Henry actually on the line. I'll be back to you in just a second, Henry, but there's a few things we have to cover first. Henry is our long-lost roving reporter for the Western world, and he has been conspicuously absent for the last about 3-4 weeks, but I'm glad we've got him back in town, and he's ready to rock, and I actually did read your blog today, Henry.
Oh, good. So, I hope.
It's all good.
Thank you. I have been out of touch. I've been doing a play for the past 3 weeks, but it is closed, and I am back. And, well, I had a great thrill a couple of weeks ago. The phone rings, and the voice at the other end says, "Hi, Henry, this is Bruce Dern. I heard you were writing an article about one of my films for True West. You had some questions. What do you want to know?"
Oh, my gosh.
Cowboys.
It was completely unexpected, but such a delight. I had a great interview with him. And I've had an interesting, actually very nice few days at the AFM, the American Film Market in Santa Monica. Have you ever gone to that?
No.
Well, it's like the industry market for buying and selling and bankrolling all kinds of independent films. Essentially anything not about guys in tights. And of which there are very few, as you know.
Well, yeah.
I found out about a lot of Westerns on the horizon, including Westernish pictures from France, Thailand, Russia, and China.
Really?
And, uh-huh. And on Monday, I had the pleasure of being on set for the second day of shooting of a new Western called Abilene, and got to talk with stars Kris Kristofferson.
Wow.
It was great.
Yes.
And Luke Hemsworth of the famous Aussie acting clan. He's the one that's on Westworld.
Yeah.
Right. And he's starring as Wild Bill Hickok in this picture.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he had his guns butt forward, just like they're supposed to be.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Anyhow, this movie... What? I'm sorry?
Nothing.
No, I was just saying, yes, that is correct. That is how he wore his guns. Yes.
Right.
I was just agreeing with you.
Yeah, I thought that was just Wild Bill Elliott playing him, but no, that's the way the real guy wore him.
Yeah, and a sash, actually. He didn't even use holsters until later on.
They were, that's right.
And a sash, yeah.
Yep. And he crossed.
And I didn't know that, and Luke told me that, so he knows something about it, too.
I'm surprised Shireko didn't tell you that.
No, he mentioned that also. He was there.
Oh, I'm sure he was.
Watching all the action
and
making sure everyone is doing their job. Anyhow, this movie is from the folks who earlier this year brought you the very entertaining Traded with Michael Perry, Trace Adkins, and Kris Kristofferson.
Gotcha.
So, and let's see, in the coming roundup, I'm going to be reviewing a Western that just came out and hasn't really gotten too much attention, despite its fine cast, In a Valley of Violence. It stars Ethan Hawke and John Travolta, and it's written and directed by the appropriately named Ty West, although he's really known for horror.
Horror.
And I've got, horror. Dum-dum-dum. And I have news from an animated feature about Calamity Jane.
Ooh. Really?
Ooh.
Yes. Now, it's coming out of Europe, and one of the interesting things is that Calamity Jane is not like a big pop culture figure here in the United States, despite the Doris Day musical and, of course, the popular character in Deadwood that Robin Weigert played so well. But she's a much bigger character in Europe because of the longtime popularity of the Franco-Belgian comic strip Lucky Luke, which has been running since 1946, and Calamity Jane has been a big character in that almost from the beginning.
Okay, then. Calamity Jane. I liked Robin Weigert. She was great in Deadwood.
Oh, wasn't she? She was terrific.
Yes.
I mean, really humanized a character that I think has been played almost grotesquely in the past. Not by Doris Day, but in other things. In the current Henry's Western Roundup, you can check out the first trailer for the Aussie Western, The Legend of Ben Hall, which is a terrific movie. Also in the roundup, let me remind folks, don't miss the wonderful American Indian Arts Marketplace at the Autry this weekend. Mm-hmm. 200 artists from over 40 different tribes showing and selling their art.
Mm-hmm. It's a remarkable event. You do not need to go to Santa Fe. You don't need to travel anywhere. Come to the Autry to experience that event.
Spoken like a true ex-Autry actor.
Absolutely. It's remarkable.
That's right.
There remarkable.
And make sure you get the fry bread.
Only you.
Well, that's
Henry.
Outside. It's an art, but it's a different kind of an art.
Culinary arts.
Yeah.
There you go. And check out the Henry's Western Roundup Facebook page to see a fine, and I warn you, very tough, 12-minute sort of a pilot for a Western series, The Black Riders.
I watched it today.
The poetry of Joseph Conrad.
I watched it today.
Uh-huh. How'd you like it?
I loved it, but it says to be continued.
It's a
right.
teaser.
Well, that's the thing. Andy McKenzie, who wrote it, who was the guy who wrote the terrific Western Sweetwater with Ed Harris and January Jones a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
This, he's been trying to make this into a series, and so I think this is like a proof of concept kind of a film. And actually, I was surprised that he wanted it out there, but he said, please share it, Henry. So I'm putting it out there, and I really think it's a terrific piece of work.
It really is.
Oh, did you notice who the Wrangler is?
Yes. I also noticed that the gear and stuff came from Peter.
That's right.
Well, you know, What's funny?
All Sherego all the time.
All Sherego all the time. When I was watching it, and the guy first rode into town, and he got off his horse, and I looked at that saddle, I said, "That's my old saddle." And then he shoots the horse.
Oh,
how dumb!
Well, hopefully he didn't put a bullet through the saddle.
No, it was still there. But it was still there.
That's good.
I actually traded Peter for that saddle. So he got a better deal.
Oh my gosh.
Any deal Peter gets into, he gets a better deal.
He always gets the better deal.
Jim is connected to every single thing that happens in this world, I swear.
I try. I just work hard at it. You know, I got my name everywhere.
What else you got for us, Henry?
Well, let's see. The November True West is out now. That's got my article on the Less Than Magnificent Magnificent 7 remake. And let's see. December's issue is coming up, and as a Wyatt Earp tribute in that, and got to speak to a whole bunch of people that worked with him from the earliest pre-TV days, all through Bruce Boxleitner was working with him in that Return to Tombstone film. And
Hugh O'Brien, you mean?
Yeah, Hugh O'Brien.
Yeah.
Oh, did I say the wrong name?
Well, you said Wyatt Earp. So, but we knew what you meant.
Well, that's you can see how my mind works. They are irrevocably melded in my head.
Wyatt, as it is,
and brave, courageous, and bold.
Like Elvis, Wyatt has not yet left the room.
That's right. And you can read all about this and more in Henry's Western Roundup at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Yay, hey, you got through it.
Hey, Henry. Henry?
Yes?
Would you please mark on your calendar April 22nd and 23rd?
April 22nd, I'm writing it down right now. What happens then?
That will be the return of the Buckaroo Bookshop at the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival.
All right.
And this year, we will have our own stage for public presentations.
Oh, boy.
As well as our space for authors. So stay tuned for more information. Henry, you're the first person that I'm talking to this about, other than, of course, Mr. Jim Christina.
Yes. So. Because, Henry, we are going to snag you for interviews.
So,
you got me.
So get that on your calendar, just so you're reserving it. And we know how busy you are, but we'll get back to you with more thoughts and brainstorming. Well,
that's terrific.
Yeah. All right, my friend.
All right.
We'll talk to you in a couple.
You betcha. Take care, guys.
Okay. Bye-bye, Henry.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Henry Park. Love Henry. Love Henry. Hey, next week is your final concert series.
For this year.
With Dennis J.
Yes, Dennis J. is coming in from Texas, and he's a wonderful singer-songwriter. Listening to Dennis is like sitting in a really wonderful kind of smoky bar in 1956 in Arkansas, listening to just great... When country and Western or Western and country music were more traditional than they are today, he is a voice that makes me weak in the knees. He's a terrific songwriter. If you like Marty Robbins, if you like Jimmy Rogers, if you like a lot of those great early voices... And original songwriting, you need to join us for Dennis J. Tickets are available, 661-347-9700. Tell us you heard about it on the Writer's Block, and we'll give you a $5 discount. And it's right at the Rep Theater on Main Street in Old Town New Hall. It'll be a remarkable night. And he's so excited. It's his first time playing the Los Angeles area.
Hey, $5 is $5, man.
No, a discount of $5.
I know. Okay. So, make sure you mention the Writer's Block.
Yeah.
I just got a message from one of our listeners, John Lenore. He has emailed us several times now, and he's becoming he's a big fan of the show. And John, I'm going to ask you, wait till about 7:35, and call in, and we're going to be discussing things that you virtually want to discuss on the radio tonight. So make sure that you call in tonight and talk to us. The number here is 818-602-4929. Again, John, get a pencil, 818-602-4929. And you can call in. We're gonna enlist our guest tonight, Mr. Richard Polinelli, who is here in the studio with us tonight. And Richard's short bio is pretty kind of cool. And it says, Richard Polinelli is an author and award-winning 2001 California Newspaper Publishers Association for Best Sports Story. sports writer and former sports editor. His first fiction credit as the lead story writer on the 1986 graphic novel series Sea Dragon preceded a 25-year newspaper career. After retiring in 2012, Richard returned to fiction writing with two short stories, Legacy of Death and The Invited, as well as the science fiction novel Maelstrom. A native of Turlock, after 2 years of research and interviews, he self-published. We call that actually independent publishing now, because that's what it is. From the Fields, A History of Prep Football in Turlock, California, which he brought me a copy the last time he was in the studio, which is really nice. And this is Richard's second visit with us. His mystery novel, Reservations, the first in a four-book series, was recently published by Oak Tree Press. And would you please welcome to the Writer's Block in studio, Mr. Richard Polinelli.
Woohoo! Standing room only.
Standing room only. Richard, how are you?
Not too bad, but now I owe $20 to everybody who.
I know,
did that.
You know what? And we just stand in line and make sure the checks don't bounce.
Well, I'm happy to be back again. It was a great visit last time. Looking forward to it.
We're absolutely looking forward to talking to you this time. It's going to be a little different tonight, though. We're going to cover some of your written material. I believe Bobby has the Sherlock Holmes.
Beyond Watson. A Sherlock Holmes anthology of stories not told.
Right. And then I have here Perfection's Arbiter, and it's a book about Babe Pinella, who was one of the big referees, or umpires. In baseball. And we're going to talk about publishing. We're going to talk about agents and getting things done and in the publishing world, which is not always easy. And Richard has actually gone three separate ways on this. He's independently published. He's published through his agent, which is, of course, our very favorite, Jeannie Loiacono. And then he's actually published to publishers on his own, which he never would have gotten there had he not had a book already published elsewhere.
Exactly.
So we're going to cover all that tonight. I just got another message. I believe it's from John Lenore. I got a very busy phone tonight, apparently. Got it.
And you were a sports writer as well.
Yeah.
So we've got sports writing and journalism in your background as well.
What brought on the anthology of Sherlock Holmes? That intrigues me.
That came out of nowhere, and it's. I'll try to make this as short a story as I can, but back in 2010, when I was getting ready to get out of sports writing, avid sci-fi reader, I found a book by a writer called Jack McDevitt. The book was Time Travelers Never Die. Loved the book. It's the first anything of his I had ever read. And so I started getting more of his books, finding out a little bit more about him, and I discovered that he was the same age when he started writing his novels as I was at that time. And it kind of gave me the thing of like, okay, you can take one more shot at this, mm-hmm. and give the fiction writing one more try. Mm-hmm. If he can do it at that age, there's no reason why you can't. And so I took a shot at it. Reservations sold. Jeannie picked it up as an agent. Oak Tree Press picked it up. And I had reached out to Jack and had exchanged some messages with him because she knew him. And he had mentioned he was going to be writing a Sherlock Holmes short story for an anthology, mm-hmm. and it was the, you know, from a historic figure, whether fictional or real, but not Watson. And I had just been researching Winston Churchill,
mm-hmm.
and the idea kind of clicked, hey, what about getting Holmes and Churchill together at some point? So I reached out to the publisher. I told him, here's my idea. I don't know if it's too late to submit or anything. Let me know what you think. And he said, I like the idea of the two of them together. Send in what you got. So I put everything else on hold for about 3 weeks, put the story together, sent it in to him, and
it
made the cut, which I was thrilled just getting into that. But, you know, a year or two earlier from today, if you'd asked me, are you doing home stories, I would have laughed at you. I've done that one. There's another anthology coming out next month, and I'm in that one as well.
Huh.
This one's Homes Away from Home.
Now, are these all of your stories?
No.
Or are these anthologies? So this is by several different writers.
Yeah. Beyond Watson
okay.
has 10 different writers.
Okay.
The Homes Away from Home, which is, it takes place in the period from 1891 to 1894 when Holmes was supposedly dead.
Uh-huh.
From the time he comes back. And there's 20 writers contributed to this one. It's two books. I'm in volume two because my story takes place right before Holmes comes back.
Gotcha.
It looks like a wonderful anthology. I haven't been able to read any other stories, but just from what I'm hearing from the editor, It's going to be a great, great series.
It seems to me that I followed Sherlock Holmes when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, 221B Baker Street and all that good stuff. It seems to me that wasn't he thrown off a bridge by Professor Moriarty at one point? And that's when he supposedly was killed.
Yeah. Doyle got sick and tired of writing about Holmes and decided he was going to kill him off. And the only way he could, which was to have him and Moriarty lock horns, and neither one of them could win. So he falls off of Reichenbach Falls. Mm-hmm. That story is the first story in the new anthology. We're going to pick up from there. And then for 3 years, Holmes had kind of wandered the earth doing different things. In 1894, he's in the south of France.
Imagine it being a Sherpa.
I think there's a story in the anthology where he's doing that. So, in 1894, he's in the south of France doing some experiments and decides it's time to come back. My story is the next to last story in that anthology. Somebody wrote a story that got in, apparently takes place before he gets all the way back to London. Then the very last story in the anthology will be Doyle's first story with Holmes back. It's the Empty Rooms. So it kind of ties it together. It's a nice flow, and I think it's just a great concept, and I'm just very thrilled and proud that I'm part of it.
I'm waiting for Bobby Jean to read it, because I know she's going to. She'll be up all night one night.
Oh, I know. Well, and it's so interesting about the voices that we hear in this. You're going to read a story through the eyes of Inspector Lestrade, Raymond Chandler, Winston Churchill, of course, Mrs. Hudson. As well as, you know, many others that Richard's talking about. And I really, that's just such a fun concept about, you know, how these other characters, Raymond Chandler, you know, how did he experience meeting the detective? So.
Yeah. Well, you remember when we had Gary, he was the guy that did the anthology about the black, help me out here.
Noir fiction?
Yes,
Yes, and we had similar, right.
Right, and he did that anthology. Mm-hmm. He was one of the writers in that anthology about the
Pulp
detectives.
Fiction. It was
Pulp Fiction, that's it. The black pulp, yeah.
We've had so many people this year.
Oh, I know.
I need to always come with the list of them because...
Well, if you're a fan of, if you like Irene Adler in the Holmes thing, she appears in this new anthology. I can swear to that because I'm the one who wrote that story.
Oh, cool. So cool.
She's in there. It's an interesting take on Holmes and Adler. Nothing like what you see in the Robert Downey Jr. movies. But I always felt that there was something more to their relationship. So the story is titled The Woman Returns. And I think Holmes... People who are into Holmes are going to know what the woman means.
Well, sure.
Yeah. So it was a fun story to write. And believe it or not, there's a third anthology that's being talked about, and I may be in that one.
You know, we had a guest on a while back. He wrote a book called Two Gun Heart.
Jeff MacArthur.
And he's doing an anthology on Vietnam stories.
That's right.
And
because he interviewed you.
Right. Yeah. And I sent him. He got one of mine. I actually dove into my memories and changed names, but the story's true. So he's got one of mine. It's kind of cool.
So this is short story. So you write across a variety of genres.
Pretty much.
Yes.
I think romance is the only one I'm not touching.
And we're not there yet, so.
Yeah. did you find it challenging? Is there any one genre or length of story that's more challenging for you to write than another?
Not really, you know, more so than another, because they all have their own little unique set of challenges and hurdles. You know, short story, you're with the Sherlock Holmes, it was 7,000 to 8,000 words. So you've got to get a lot in and have it make sense and be enjoyable. You know, I've written up to a 94,000 word with From the Fields, but I had 95 years of history to write about, so that kind of led to a bigger length. They're all fun to do. They're all, you know, annoying in some instances, and some they're kind of nice. With science fiction, I'm not limited, so it's just whatever I feel like doing, I can do. With the Del Rio series, the mystery thrillers, you've got to create the crime or the mystery and explain it without giving it all away too quick. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's kind of a challenge, and it kind of limits you some ways. With nonfiction, you got to be true to history or you're going to lose your readers, and they're never going to read anything you write nonfiction again. Mm-hmm. So you have to be extra careful and spend a lot of extra time, double, triple, quadruple checking everything. When I did From the Fields, the stats section that is at the back of that book, 2 months from the time I had it compiled and done to the next 2 months of just double checking everything and making sure.
And you do the same thing in Perfection's Arbiter.
Yeah,
the end
easier.
Of the book is just pages and pages of stats.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that book for just a second, because it feels so timely having just come out of the World Series. And even though you're talking about a different time and a different, tell us a little bit about, I couldn't put it down. It's baseball, it's nonfiction, but it read as engagingly as a novel. Tell us a little bit about that book.
Well, he had an amazing life. He was, the reason why it came out in October when it did was it was the 60th anniversary of the only perfect game ever thrown in World Series history. He was the home plate umpire. And it was the last game he was going to be a home plate umpire. He had announced before the series, this is it, I'm done. Game five is going to be his last behind the plate. The last two games he was, I think, out in second,
yeah,
and third.
Right.
So what a way to go out, mm-hmm. to have that kind of a game. And the pitcher for the Dodgers didn't exactly pitch that badly. Larson just went out of his mind that day. So it was nice to get that out on the anniversary. I've been trying for years to get that thing written. It's kind of personal to me because Babe Pinelli is my second cousin twice removed. And I didn't find out about him until about 2 months after he died. So this book is basically the last 30 years of me, you know, digging through pre-internet days. It was not easy to do. Internet days, it's a little easier to find stuff of collecting what I could of him. And then I want to tell a story because this guy had an incredible life. His baseball career almost ended before it started, mm-hmm. because of all things, he got mad at an umpire. They were arguing a called strike. The umpire took his mask off to yell at him and hit him with the mask. Well, Babe Pinelli had a temper. He gets hit with the mask. He slugs the umpire. And that should have been it. He should have been done. And there was a lot of people who were at the game who wrote to the commissioner of the Pacific Coast League. Even the umpire involved said, hey, look, you know, I kind of caused this. And so he was just suspended. But that was a battle for him his whole life, that temper of his. And he overcame it, and it wasn't easy for him when he transitioned to an umpire. Because as an umpire, you can't lose it, or you won't be one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can kind of relate to that. I have a little bit of a temper every once in a while. So it was interesting to see how he dealt with that and overcame it.
Well, and it covers really the history of our country during all of the years, because we have the earthquake, the San Francisco earthquake, mm-hmm. of 1906. Early on, of course, in the book, when he's a young boy living in San Francisco with his family. So we cover, and he retires in,
56.
In 56, he retires with that last game, and then he lives another...
About 28 years after.
Right,
he died in 84.
Right. And the game of baseball changes so much during all of that time.
Radically.
You know? Mm-hmm. It was the Brooklyn Dodgers in that 1956 game.
The Bums.
It was funny, when the book first came out, there's a Facebook group that's devoted to Brooklyn Dodgers. You see Los Angeles Dodgers, these people run, because they're not happy about, to this day, they're still not happy they lost their team. So I came out and said, hey, guys, you know, I'm looking for any old photographs for the book or for the website. Any help, you know, let me know, and here's what it is. It's about Babe Pinelli, and a couple of people are like, we don't like that guy because of 56. And I'm like, I can't do anything about that. But it was fun digging into it, because there's a lot of baseball history that I didn't know he was connected to. He was the home plate umpire for Jackie Robinson's first game, and he was selected.
Oh, really?
He was selected for that specifically, because by that time he had the reputation of, if you've got a problem, he's the man who will put the fire out, and he's not going to let a game get out of control. He's not going to let any of the extra stuff that was going on at the time interfere with that game. And from what I could tell, I mean, he called a great game, and there was nothing major that happened. You know, there was idiots in the stands doing stuff, but that's today too. So,
yeah.
But there's a lot. He was the first night baseball game.
Right. That was interesting about the lights. And
yeah.
That was very interesting. And now you mentioned that he is not honored at the Baseball Hall of Fame. Has that changed, or do you hope this book will perhaps have an impact on that?
I'm kind of hoping it will. There's a veterans committee that may or may not take it up. He was up. They had a few years back, they had a group of old umpires and players that they were looking at. And I think he made it a couple of rounds into it, but he didn't get finally enshrined. I think he should be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm biased, but you know.
Are there a lot of umpires?
Not a whole lot, but there's two of them that he mm-hmm. worked with that are. And I have a quote in the book from one of those two that says he considers Pennelly a better umpire than he was. So, you know, veterans committee, read, listen, and listen to that umpire, please. Get him in.
Well, I mean, you know, that's you're never gonna get everybody's vote.
No, but he should be.
As we all know,
he should be in there. He had a pretty amazing career. There's not too many umpires that were players first.
Nice job there. I break the microphone.
The microphone.
I talk with my hands. It's dangerous.
It's okay. A Dago thing.
It's okay.
But no, I mean, not too many umpires were players first and then transitioned. It's a rare group that did that. And yeah. I think he's Hall worthy.
Well, and you were able to find so many stats. I guess that's
the whole back of the book is nothing
but
stats. But
even throughout the book, so obviously baseball statistics are kept. I mean, yeah. It seemed like throughout most of his career, you could get the stats from most games that he,
well, you should, yeah.
You know, that
yeah,
he probably. Played, and that's amazing to me,
there's,
too.
There's
you know?
A website, baseballreference.com. It's got all the major league games, every box score for every game. Thank God they did that. Saved me a lot of time at the library.
Sure.
But the Pacific Coast League stuff? Microfilm.
Well, I was going to say, because
some
of these teams are long gone, or the leagues, that was so interesting, too. When you write, do you use an outline, or how did you envision the telling of this story? Did you?
Well, with this one, it was going to be in order of it happening. You know, I'd start from his early life and work my way up. So that was pretty easy to do. As far as outlining, I basically had I want to cover this time period in this chapter, this time period in this chapter, and just kind of went from that. And sometimes I get to a point in a chapter where it's like, okay, I got to cut this chapter in half. We'll just add on. So I have a basic outline. I don't stick to it because as I'm going, things will change and an idea will hit and we're off on a different track that I had anticipated. So.
I felt that this kind of material could be fairly dry,
mm-hmm.
But I felt like it was as engaging as reading fiction. He had a charming wife. There's dialogue. There's, you know, you feel like you're right there along with the players. You can feel his frustration at times or his joy at times. When you write, what is it you're, how are you hoping to connect to, what is it that you're hoping to do that to connect to the reader?
I just hope that they see him not just as this umpire on television, or, you know, back then it was mostly on the radio, but, you know, you have this view of what an umpire should be, how he should act, and with him, there's a very human side to him. You know, there's a lot of doubt in his own mind as he was coming up, even as a player,
mm-hmm.
That he overcame. So I wanted to kind of give people, you know, a feeling of, hey, this guy had some demons that he knew about and overcame them. And, you know, it just gave that human touch.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Bobby Jean, you don't know this about her. I'm fixing to tell a tale.
Inside Secrets.
Bobby Jean, before 19 or 2009, probably didn't read hardly any fiction at all.
Well,
now
there were
you can't
years
rip
where,
them out of her cold, dead hands. She's up all night reading books, but she has to read a book a week, just like, you know,
or
don't we all?
Two or three to get ready for tonight.
Yeah, and you know, Bobby Jean now has opened her mind up, and she's discovering this whole world that she never knew existed.
Yeah, I read a lot of fiction in college and all, and you know, but once I was on staff at the Autry, it was all nonfiction.
Preparing
for exhibits and things, it was heavy into nonfiction, which I hadn't really been much of a reader. And so meeting you and starting to read Western fiction, that was very odd in the beginning because I was so engrossed in nonfiction.
Yeah.
So it's been a very interesting, and this show has been such a blessing because I've read thrillers and mysteries and biographies and just a wide range of work.
I can open up a library just with the books I've got, you know, at my place.
I don't even want to hear about it. He told me about all this crap he has at home, and I just... I said I have like 12 or...
So he still doesn't do it electronically. He still believes in having those
books. He's like us. He believes in the hard copies.
I've got hard copies. I buy hard copies, but I also have my tablet. And everything that I can get electronically, I buy the copy of that because when I travel, I can't lug that, you know, that storage shed with me.
Yeah.
You know, I wish it rained more because I would get more reading in.
Yeah.
I'm a book, cup of coffee, and listen to the rain. I can't. I had to get up at 3. That's when you're going to bed.
You get accustomed to that, though. You learn how to do that.
Yeah, it's true. We have... Richard, moving along and coming into the publishing side of things now. When you first started publishing, how did you get a hold of Jeannie Loy O'Connell?
Mm-hmm. Or how did she find you?
Or how did she find you?
I found her back after I finally decided, I'm going to stop staying up till 1 in the morning covering sports. I wrote the series, the Jack Del Rio series. I had the first book completed.
Mm-hmm.
The second book, which just came out last week, was a screenplay I wrote back in 98. I converted it to a novel. I was going to polish it up as we were going. So I've got this idea for a four-book series. Mm-hmm. I've got the first book done, second book's close. And I just hit the internet.
Hang on just a second. We have a caller coming in.
Oh, okay.
Hi, welcome to the Writer's Block. Who am I speaking to?
This is John. You requested I call in.
John, hey. Lenore, how are you?
Welcome, John.
This is our
Thank you. This is our buddy
that's been emailing us.
I sent you a couple, and they were quite long. I apologize for that.
Okay.
Oh, no, we love them.
We read every word. and it earned you a coffee cup.
It did. It's the best coffee mug I have in my apartment.
I'm telling you. Richard says the same thing. He won't even use his.
Nope.
Nope, it's not for use. It's for display. Yeah.
Well, John, we asked you to call in because Richard is highly knowledgeable in how to get things done. Or he's over here giving me the eye, but I know better. And as we all know a little bit, so please feel free to ask any question you want to ask. Tonight is your night.
Well, I looked back at the emails I sent because I was trying to remember what questions I had actually asked you. Mm-hmm. And the first one that I asked, I think, was the statistics of the writing industry. When you go online, you read about how many books are bought and how many, you know, how to publish and how many books get read. And it's all these very depressing statistics about how essentially being a writer, you know, might be a good hobby, but not really a career. And I would be interested in just hearing your guys' thoughts on that.
Richard? So you throw that one right to me.
Yeah, right to you.
You know,
I'll pick up a little bit of it.
It's a good one.
Unless your name is James Patterson or J.K. Rowling, you're not going to retire on your book. And that's just a harsh reality you gotta face and you gotta live with. You hope and pray that... you get a book that will sell well. That's what you're always looking for. But it's a long road to get there. It's a lot of work to get there, and you got to be committed to doing it. Trust me, I know. I know too well.
Yes, you do.
But it can be done. It's just you got to be ready to put in the work.
And also, John, while we're at on that subject, you also have to realize that most publishers now, the bigger houses, they don't want new writers. They want writers that are established, that have been published before, that are, you know, the public knows their name, and that they want to sell books. That's what they're in business for. And if you're starting on your very first novel, get with a small, independent little publishing company, and that'll help you along. But they're all going to tell you one thing, and you're going to have to self-promote your stuff. And that means going to book sales and book signings and shows and every show you can get into with your book, you have to go.
And
you
radio just have programs.
To go. And radio shows. I mean, you know, we have one sitting right here, and we'll welcome you as soon as you get one published.
Well, and it sounds, as I think about this question, John, and I think over many of the people we've spoken to, even with our judge guest last week, so many people have regular work that right. they're doing. We find this with artists and musicians as well.
They're
keeping the bill-paying job, anxious to be able to be free of it. But in the meantime, they're learning their craft, whether they're a weekend performer or they're writing at night. I think our judge last week said he only had a few hours a week while he was working, and that book had been around. You know, many people started right. the book years ago
right. he
and
had
then
a, the
pull
big
it out of the
box.
We've heard that from other folks
yeah,
as well.
We have heard that before,
and I
yeah.
think that was your situation too, Richard, with the with reservations? Mm-hmm. Was it with reservations?
Actually, with Betrayals, because Betrayals was originally a screenplay in 98.
Right. Right.
And we shopped it around Hollywood. We had one guy who said he was interested. He'd get back to us in 3 weeks, and about a week later, he dropped dead of a heart attack. That's how thin the line is sometimes.
Well, yeah, but that's Hollywood.
That's Hollywood.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just got to understand it's a long road. You got to do a lot of work for it. But if you do and you keep going, it's the only way you're going to get there.
Right.
And
now, John, did you finish your screenplay that you were working on?
I finished a pilot for a TV show.
Okay.
And my co-writer is editing it. I think he's listening. He was excited when I was going to be on, and I sent him the link. So,
oh, cool.
But he's editing it right now, and okay. I'm working on the next four installments, and hopefully we hope to get it produced. And but in the meantime, I'm also working on some books, and that's why I was asking the sort of the
right.
the book writing question.
Right.
And
right.
You guys sort of answered it, and one of the parts that that's kind of still lingers is, you know, it's, you talked about how it's a lot of self-promotion. You know, if you put in that amount of time for the self-promotion, it would seem like sometimes you might not have the time for the day job, or vice versa.
Well, that is true.
And I think that's a frustration.
It is a huge frustration, and there's more than one writer, myself included, that doesn't have the time
right.
to self-promote the way I should.
Yeah. Well, and I think Carolyn Johnson, Howard Johnson's book about how to promote your book, she's got two or three on
right.
the frugal editing and marketing. If you haven't listened to that interview or had a moment to get her books, I found a wealth of gold nuggets in those publications. And
right.
she talks a lot about the self, the needing to
right.
be shameless and
right.
And I think, John, you're absolutely right in this sort of do-it-yourself world that we're supposed to be able to do everything ourselves. You need time to create. And I don't know how all of you that create find the time to also do the other pieces, because you have to have
right.
creative time.
Right. Well, Richard's very fortunate in the fact that his job is housework.
So I retired, sort of.
Yeah. His wife is over at Las Robles while he's sitting around yeah. vacuuming and writing.
Well, she agreed to this. She said, look, you know, you want to hang up as a sports writer, I'm fine with that, and I want you to do the fiction writing. But if you're the one that's going to be at home, guess what? So that was the deal, and I took that on. But, you know, one thing you mentioned, editing earlier, and that's something I wanted to bring up. I would never, ever have gotten Reservations sold or even gotten Jeannie to look at it if I hadn't gotten to an editor first
mm-hmm.
and had them go through that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it costs some money. It's well worth it, because if I hadn't done that, I don't think Reservations would have caught anybody's interest, and we wouldn't be sitting here talking, for one.
Right.
And I wouldn't have the second book coming out last week like it did, or the Holmes anthologies.
Right.
All of that, you've got to get that book
right.
polished before you even reach out to an agent or a publisher.
Right.
It's got no chance.
Well, I know that polishing it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be type perfect.
No.
It just means it has to be readable without having to stumble over extra commas, ands, and everything
yeah.
else.
And
misspellings.
Plot holes. If you have any
yeah.
plot holes, forget it. You're
yeah.
done.
And an agent is going to, agent wants you to submit. There's Jeannie Loiacono probably has one of the best pages for how to submit
mm-hmm.
In the industry. And if you go to Loiacono Literary Agency,
yeah.
I think it's .net or .org.
.com.
Yeah. Loiacono is Loiacono.
Mm-hmm.
Loiacono Literary Agency.com. You go to her, how to submit, and she's got an entire entire page that tells you step by step how to submit a manuscript for approval.
Yeah. And she was not the first. She wasn't the first agent I submitted to. You also got to be ready to hear no a lot.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Quite
oh,
a
yeah.
lot. Mm-hmm. It took me a year from the start of the search for an agent to get Jeannie.
Right.
After that, I think it was another year before we got Oak Tree Press.
Yeah.
So it's a long process.
So Richard, how do you protect, and Jim, you too? How do you kind of protect your self-esteem when you're putting your creative work out there and you're getting those no's? Because I think, John, that was kind of a question you had, too. How do you protect yourself from that?
A 2-liter bottle of Dr. Pepper and a bottle of Southern Comfort.
Oh, my God, you're my kind of man.
No, I'm kidding.
You can't wear it on your sleeve, John.
That's true.
You cannot wear it on your sleeve.
It's such a great question, though.
You know, if you're going to be upset by no's, then get out of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to have a thick skin.
Because somebody is going to like it. You may go through 30 people, but one of those 30 is going to like it. So, it just depends. It's a matter of odds. It's throwing the dice.
I sent query letters out to 168 agents before I got a yes. So, yeah, you just got to brace yourself. Don't take it personal. And it's easy to say, not easy to do.
Right.
And if you get your book published and you get a negative review, don't take it personal.
Right.
Don't reply to it. And trust me, I know you want to just go
rip
right
somebody
at them.
A new one.
But you've got to understand there's, 7 billion people on this planet? Not every single one of them is going to like what you wrote.
Well, and you also have to remember, too, John, that when you send out query letters, they're not always going to be – your manuscript's not always going to be in the genre that they want.
Yeah. Yeah, make sure that they represent that.
But they will usually tell you that. So, I mean, we would love to help you any way we can. And we're going to give you email addresses and stuff, how to get in touch with all of us tonight. So you'll have it. You'll have those available to you. Are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh,
I'm just
good.
Well, we didn't scare him off.
I did look up Jeannie's website.
Because oh,
I think when I went back and looked at some of the older shows, I told you if I miss a show, I...
Right.
I thought I hung up, but I told you when I miss a show, I go back and I watch some of the older ones.
Right,
and
right, right.
That one of the older episodes, I think you had her as a guest.
Yeah, she was a guest on. Yes,
we did.
No, she's a great.
So I got her information from there. So and I did look at the page and how to submit, and that was all very premature. But I was just to get an idea.
But Richard is absolutely right when he says, edit, edit, edit. Proofread, edit. Proofread, edit. Proofread, edit.
What else I have found about Jeannie's site, because so many of our guests have come from her writers, and I don't know if this would help you, John, or not. Not being a writer, I don't have any idea. But I have found looking at the types of genres that is represented. Reading the bios on all the different types of authors. Mm-hmm. She has great links on their websites. Many of them blog or there have been interviews with them. That there's a wealth of information for trying to get in the head, maybe, of other authors. You know, if you're just reading bios on publishers' websites or what all, you might not get some gold nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
But looking at who this agency happens to represent, what types of books seem to be topical, that they're the genres that they're looking for, because she's all across the board. There's fiction and nonfiction and romance and mysteries, and I mean it's across the board.
Right.
But you kind of begin to get a feeling for this particular agency.
Right. Right. But they don't agents sometimes do not they will list their agents that work with them, but they're not always real clear as to what genre they will work with. And so you kind of have to guess. You know, and so you just wind up taking a list and sending the letter to everybody.
Yeah.
Well, Jim, one of the things I read online as I was, doing some internet searching was they suggest that you find a book that's very much like your topic, especially if it's like nonfiction or something, or even fiction, and you look at who published that book, or who the agent was for that person who wrote that book.
Correct. That's a very good idea. That's a very good hint.
That's a great idea. Richard, do you belong to any writing groups or go to conferences, and have you found those things helpful?
Yeah, I am. Most of my writing groups are online. I don't you know, we moved around so much the last couple of years, trying to find a local group is kind of hard and stick with it. But there's some online groups. There's people online that you can reach out to, that you can kind of bounce things off of. If you you feel like you're hitting a wall, you can talk to them. They can help you out. I found my editor through one of those. Thank God, because she did such a great job with reservations. So there's resources out there, and you go out there, you find them, and bleed them as much as you can, and get every drop of information you can, and use it, because you need all of that if you're gonna get published.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as I said at the opening of the show, Richard is independently published. He's gone through an agent, and he's published on his own. So I mean, he's gone through all of the potholes that any one writer can go through. And he's absolutely right. Don't plan on getting rich. If you want people to read your book, print some and give them the book, you know, and hope they pass it around, and hope that that your name gets known. At least, even if it's in your neighborhood.
Well, that's one of the advantages, I think, of the project I'm working on, and both the books and the TV episode is that both me and the co-writer are, you know, neither of us would want to get rich, or, you know, we're not going to be writing the next Harry Potter. We just kind of want to do it because we're passionate about doing it, and we want to do something we're passionate about, you know, for a living. So so that's why we're looking at, neither one of us, you know, are planning to retire. We just like to make enough that we could afford to put the time in to self-promote and to put the time in to do all those type of things. And like Bobby Jean said, to be creative.
Right, right. Well, selling a pilot, well, you might be able to live on that. But selling a book, nah, probably not. Not anymore. I mean, like Richard said, unless your name is James Patterson or John Sanford, J.K. Rowling. Oh, incidentally, she would probably sue you for using the Harry Potter name.
Well, and you know, another idea, I don't know that anybody's shared this, but even some of the people that we've had on this show, like Courtney Joyner,
right?
If you were to email or go to Courtney's website, because he's a full-time writer, Dale Jackson, some of these folks have made their living. That is what they're doing.
Well, Dale got fortunate because they're making a movie out of one of his books.
But I would encourage you, any of our listeners that have, these are such great questions that John has. I'm going to bet, knowing some of these people ourselves, they would probably share other gold nuggets with you.
I'm sure they would.
And I would reach out. You know, Courtney, one of those first books he published was he wrote as a young man letters to directors, and he got amazing responses from like directors with big names. They were big names then, but he really wanted to learn more about directing, and he just wrote letters, and he got letters back.
He made a phone call.
And then that became a book.
He made a phone call to, what's his name? Oh God, the guy who used to work with Sam Peckinpah all the time.
Yeah, and all of them
book,
are
The Westerners.
Escaping my,
and he just called them, and they said, "Yeah, come on out."
Yeah, and he was, I don't know, like maybe 20. I mean,
yeah,
he was young.
Film school.
He's not an old guy now, but
no.
To me, that was fascinating.
It was.
He kind of stepped out of a comfort zone and just said, "What can they do? I mean, what can they do to me? You know, I'm just going to write them."
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we are out of time.
Oh my
John.
Gosh, where'd this hour go?
This hour just flew by. Please, Richard, give him your email address in case he wants to contact you directly, if you would, please.
You can go to my website. There's a contact form there. Fill that out. It comes to my email address, or you can email me directly. It's all lowercase. It's RP, my initials, at, and then my first and last name, richardpaulinelli.com, spelled like it sounds.
There you go.
Email me that, or contact me through the website. It comes to me. I get a little flag that says I got a message, and I'd be happy to answer anything I could.
There you go. He also has a Facebook page.
And a Twitter account.
And a Twitter account, yeah.
I've lost track of what I got.
I don't think you Twitter. I don't think you tweet at 3 o'clock in the morning, do you?
It depends.
Okay.
I once had an 18-hour writing session. I was up at 3
in the morning.
Oh, there you go.
John, you can also go to info@blackdogpublishing.co, and I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have. That is actually my little publishing company. Or you can write us here. Actually, you can't write us here, but you can write Bobby Jean at BobbyJeanBell@gmail.com.
Yes, you can. And tell me what authors you'd like to hear from.
There you go.
Go and through she can give the whole list of podcasts, and I'll be happy to share their contact information with you. John, and any of our listeners, I mean, this is, I think all of our guests that we've had would be very open to that.
And everybody out there, no matter the doom and gloom I may have laid on you a little earlier, keep writing. If that's
keep
what
writing.
You want to do,
always stay.
Keep writing. Don't
stop.
Let anybody talk you out of it if that's what you want to do.
Never right? stop. Never stop. And
well, you guys have been great. I thank you very much for having me on and taking my questions. It's been very informative. And
I'll tell you one more thing, John.
In mind.
One more thing, real quick. April of next year, make sure you make it to Santa Clarita, the Cowboy Festival. We'll have the Buckaroo Bookshop there, and there will be several wonderful authors in there that will be happy to answer any question you
a
have.
A lot of that's what goes on there.
Exactly.
People
exactly.
come and they talk
to... We spend
to,
all day talking to
talking
people.
Talking about, right.
So
a great place to
do,
network.
Please do come. And that's going to be it for us for another Thursday night. Thank you, Rona, for letting me have an extra 5 minutes.
Wow.
This night just flew by. Thank you, Richard, so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me back.
I mean, you know, I found you wandering around in the Walmart parking lot, so I figured I might as well bring you
in. Hey,
you
got to make money somewhere.
There you go. And I want to thank everybody, including our listener, John Lenore, for calling in, and all of our listeners at home. Please, please, please tune in next week when we have a lady who wrote a wonderful series of books about the Harvey girls.
Mm-hmm, that'd be fun.
And Bobby Jean, of course, her concert next week, Dennis J. This is her last concert of the year.
Then Thanksgiving.
And that will be our last show for November. Oh, no. I think we have one after Thanksgiving. Whatever.
Oh, do we have 5 Thursdays in Thanksgiving? I don't
know.
I just go
know.
Week by week.
I get lost. Anyway, next week, Russ Avison will be with me in the studio, along with the bookie herself. Jerry Christina will be here because she wants to be met by this young lady who wrote these books. Okay, John, thanks for calling in. Richard, thanks for being with us. Thank you all for a wonderful, wonderful Thursday night. And we are out of here for tonight.